In this module, we shall look at the expenses that are allowed in arriving at net taxable earnings. Before we do so, let's remind ourselves where they slot in to the employment income pro forma. Our starting point is cash remuneration, such as salary and bonuses. To this, we add any benefits, and we also need to include any expenses reimbursed to the employee by the employer. Note here that all expenses paid by an employer to an employee are treated in the first instance as emoluments, i.e., money coming in to the employee. This gives taxable earnings. It is at this point we can take a deduction for any deductible expenses, and the taxable earnings less the expenses gives us net taxable earnings for the tax year. It is this figure that slots into the income tax computation as non-savings income. In this module, we will concentrate on what comprises an allowable deduction for employment income purposes. Allowable deductions broadly fall into five main categories. First, we'll take a look at expenses which are deductible under Section 336 of the Earnings and Pensions Act. Section 336 is a very important piece of legislation as far as employment expenses are concerned. Qualifying travel expenses are allowable deductions. We shall take a look at the detailed rules in this area later. Payments made by an employee to an occupational pension scheme are also deductible from taxable earnings. The detailed rules with regards to pension contributions will be dealt with in a later module. If an employee pays professional fees or subscriptions to an organisation approved by the Inland Revenue, these subscriptions are deductible from taxable earnings. Finally here, donations made by an employee to charity under the payroll deduction scheme are also allowable expenses. We will start our analysis of employment expenses with a detailed look at Section 336. Section 336 lays out the general rules for deductions to be made from taxable earnings. A deduction under the general rules is allowed if A. The employee is obliged to incur and pay the expense as holder of the employment, and B. The amount is wholly, exclusively, and necessarily incurred in the performance of the duties. In order to ascertain whether an expense is deductible, we need to look closely at the terms wholly, exclusively, and necessarily. We will start by looking at the word necessarily, as this is the biggest obstacle to us when trying to persuade the revenue that our employment expenses are deductible. The question the revenue will ask us is, could the employee do his job without incurring that particular expense? If the answer to this question is yes, i.e., he could do his job if that expense had not been incurred, the revenue will argue that the expense is not absolutely necessary and is not, therefore, deductible from his taxable earnings. However, if the employee can answer no to that question, i.e., he cannot do his job without incurring that expense, the expense will be necessary for the performance of the duties and will, therefore, be allowable. The revenue are very strict in applying this rule, and it is notoriously difficult for employees to get relief for expenses under Section 336. Later on, we will have a look at a couple of tax cases, and you will see that the revenue have been successful more often than the taxpayer, and most disputed claims for expenses have been disallowed. Moving on to qualifying travel expenses. Sections 337 and 338 deal with the deductibility of travel expenses. Under general principles, a deduction for the employee's travel costs will be allowed if the expenses are either necessarily incurred on travelling in the performance of the duties of the employment, or attributable to the employee's necessary attendance at any place in the performance of the duties of the employment. Section 338 specifically denies a deduction for expenses of ordinary commuting. Ordinary commuting in this context is defined as travel between either the employee's home and a permanent workplace, or a place that is not a workplace, e.g. a hotel or someone else's home, and a permanent workplace. Let us run through an illustration. If an employee incurs travel expenses in going from his home to his normal place of work, these expenses will not be allowable, as they constitute expenses of ordinary commuting. You will be aware of this already, as your employer does not reimburse you for home-to-office travelling, and you do not get tax relief for these costs. If an employer does reimburse the costs of home-to-office travel, this is a taxable benefit in kind. No deduction is allowed for travel between any two places, that is, for practical purposes, substantially ordinary commuting. This means that if an employee, for instance, is required to attend a training college, and the journey to the college is substantially the same as that to the usual place of work, and at a similar expense, no deduction will be allowed for travel costs to the college. However, once at work, if an employee incurs expenses in travelling from his normal place of work to visit a client, that is not ordinary costs of commuting, but is instead travel expenses incurred in the performance of the duties, and as such, these expenses will be deductible. So, office-to-client travel is allowable. But what if the employee travels directly from his home to the client and doesn't go into the office first? The revenue have accepted that these travel expenses are allowable, as they are not ordinary costs of commuting, but only providing that the client's premises constitute a temporary workplace. A temporary workplace is defined as a place which the employee attends in the performance of his duties in order to perform a task of limited duration, or for some other temporary purpose. A workplace will not be temporary if the employee attends for a period of continuous work lasting more than 24 months. A period of continuous work is a period over which the duties of employment are performed to a significant extent at that workplace. HMRC considers the duties to be performed to a significant extent if the employee spends 40% or more of their time at that place. Therefore, if an employee is visiting a client for a day or a few days or even a few months, the client premises will be a temporary workplace, and travel to and from that workplace will be deductible expenses. It is possible for temporary workplace to change its nature and become a permanent workplace. This will happen if, for instance, the employee has worked at that location for a continuous period of 24 months, or it becomes apparent that the absence from the original permanent workplace will exceed 24 months. In these instances, travel costs up to the point of change are deductible, but costs after that date are not. Let us look at some examples to see how this rule works in practice. Judith, who lives in Didcot, has worked for her employer for the past 5 years in Oxford. She is sent by her employer to work full-time in Bracknell for 18 months, after which time she will return to Oxford. Judith cannot claim a deduction for the cost of travel between her home in Didcot and her workplace in Oxford, because Oxford is her permanent workplace. No relief is available for the expenses of ordinary commuting. The workplace in Bracknell may be a temporary workplace, as Judith's attendance there is for a limited duration. The time in Bracknell will be a period of continuous work, as Judith will spend over 40% of her time there, so the 24-month rule needs to be considered. As the period will not exceed 24 months, Bracknell will be a temporary workplace, and the costs of travel will be allowable. If after 12 months the secondment is extended to 28 months, Judith will be able to deduct the costs of travel for the first 12 months. After that point, the secondment is expected to exceed 24 months, and so Bracknell is now a permanent workplace. No further relief for travel costs will be available. Rainer lives in Cleckheaton and works in Leeds 5 days a week. His employer sends him to work in the Manchester office 1 day a week for 3 years. Leeds is Rainer's permanent workplace, and he cannot claim for the costs of travel between Cleckheaton and Leeds. Manchester may be a temporary workplace, as Rainer's attendance there is for a limited duration. We do not need to consider the 24-month rule, as Rayner's attendance in Manchester is not in the course of a period of continuous work, as he does not spend 40% or more of his time there. As a result, Manchester is a temporary workplace, and the costs of travel between Cleckheaton and Manchester will be deductible. Lastly here, a couple of additional points on travel expenses, starting with area-based employees. An area could be regarded as a permanent workplace, and therefore travel costs to and from that area would not be deductible. An area-based employee is one whose employment duties are defined by reference to an area rather than a specified site or building, and where the employee attends different places in the area in the course of his job. A travelling salesman or insurance agent responsible for a particular geographical area would be an example of an area-based employee. Certain site-based employees will have no permanent workplace and will travel to various different sites to perform their duties. Providing that a job at a particular site is not expected to last more than 24 months, costs of travelling from home to site and back again will be deductible. Finally, an employee whose employment contract is for less than 24 months is by definition not travelling to and from a temporary workplace. Deductions for travel costs in these instances will be denied. The cost of business travel also includes subsistence costs attributable to the journey in question. Similarly, where an employee has to stay away overnight on business, the cost of the accommodation is part of the cost of business travel. Therefore, the full cost of meals and accommodation while travelling or staying away on business is allowable as part of the costs of travel. For example, David is required to spend 2 months working at his employer's Edinburgh office. He usually works in the Cardiff office. David flies to Edinburgh on Monday morning and stays in a hotel, travelling home Friday afternoon. He has his meals either in the hotel or a local restaurant. Edinburgh is a temporary workplace, so the costs of the journey to and from Edinburgh are allowable, as are the costs of the hotel accommodation and meals. Some expenditure that an employee might incur while making a business journey is not expenditure attributable to the journey. For example, private phone calls, newspapers and laundry. However, if the employer pays or reimburses no more than £5 per night for UK trips and £10 per night for overseas trips, such payments are not subject to tax. If the employer pays more than these amounts, the amounts are taxable in full. A deduction from taxable earnings is allowed for an amount paid by an employee in respect of certain professional fees and subscriptions. A deduction for professional fees is allowed provided that the employment involves the practice of the profession to which the fee relates, and the payment of the fee is a condition which must be met if that profession is to be practised. Section 343 contains a list of deductible fees, and these include practice fees for doctors, dentists, opticians, vets, lawyers, architects, and teachers. A deduction from taxable earnings is also allowed for annual subscriptions paid to an approved body. The revenue has a published list of such bodies. The subscription will be deductible as long as the activities of the body are of direct benefit to or concern the profession practised in the performance of the duties. So, for example, a subscription by a company director to the Institute of Directors would be deductible from the taxable earnings because the subscription relates to the employment and is to an approved body. However, if the same director then paid a subscription to his local golf club, this would not be deductible as this has nothing to do with the employment. The inspector would not accept an argument that it is absolutely necessary for this employee to be a member of the golf club, even though he may meet clients and do some business at the club. This was tested in the tax case of Brown and Bullock, where a bank manager's gentleman's club fees were disallowed by the courts on the grounds that they were not absolutely necessary. He could do his job as a bank manager without being a member of the club. The fact that his club membership occasionally won him some business was held to be irrelevant.